Do you find yourself at a threshold? Are you at a point where you're kind of plateauing? We're talking in this episode about how to break through your own yield threshold, strategies for doing so with Matt Miles and Kelly Garrett.
Welcome to Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve podcast, where real farmers share real insights and real results to help you improve your farming operation. This episode of Cutting the Curve is brought to you by Claas, where machines aren't just made, they're made for more. With a wide range of tractors, combines, foragers, and hay tools, Claas is a family business just as driven, demanding, and dedicated as yours. Go to Claas.com and start cutting your curve with their cutting-edge equipment. And now, here's your host, Damian Mason.
Hey there, welcome to another fantastic episode of Extreme Ag Cutting the Curve. We got a great topic for you. It was spawned in late fall by Matt Miles. He talked about being kind of at a plateau. His yields were good, above county average, and it's not that you want to run to the coffee shop and brag about that. His point was, like, it seems like I've stagnated a little bit here. I'm really happy, but I'm wondering, I'm not seeing the rate of gain. This happens when you take your farming game to the next level. You go up, you get better at what you do. That's great. That's why you're here at Extreme Ag. But then maybe you kind of hit a threshold. How do you get past that threshold? So that's what we're talking about here today, because the point is you can keep doing new stuff, cool stuff, exciting stuff, and eventually, finally, it's not the new and exciting stuff, and you may have to take it to the next level. Kelly Garrett is talking about some things that he says, I didn't even do this. I didn't even know what this was 5 years ago. That's my new strategy. And then Matt Miles is going to lead us off because he's the one that introduced this topic. You're not unhappy at 81 bushel beans, but you feel like you've kind of plateaued there. And now you're saying, what's my strategy, to George W. Bush word, what's my strategy to get to the next level?
Yeah. So, you know, and this is a really tough subject, you know, because you have to stay involved and be involved in your farming operation to even know, you know, why is this happening? And it's always easier to bring your yields up from 60 to 70 or 60 to 80. But there becomes a point on that incline to where, you know, you start running into walls. And that's what I've been seeing this year. I was actually looking at some of the, you know, the tests and stuff we've done that weren't productive on my farm. We're going to do them again. You know, because it don't work 1 year, don't mean we're not going to try it again. But what I was seeing in the trend was my 10-year average and my 5-year average was pretty close to the same. So 10 years ago, you know, we take soybeans, for instance, we got our soybean yield up to say 78 bushel average and then you go to my 5-year average and it was like 80, 79. I don't remember the exact numbers now. And I'm like, you know, that's a bushel difference in 10 years worth of, you know. And so then we looked at a 2-year average and we said, okay, that it's better, you know, in a 2-year average. And I attribute that to exactly what we're going to talk about today, which is when you get to a wall, how do you fix that wall? Now, there's not a lot of new, you know, fertilizer. Just take anhydrous, because Kelly uses that. Anhydrous is the same anhydrous it was 20 years ago. So we're not improving anhydrous. No. What we've got to figure out to do is how to improve our nitrogen placement or where our fertility is going to go. And Kelly's going to get deeper into this because he's way smarter at it than I am. But something that I didn't even know, you know, 5 years ago was base saturation. I didn't even know what that meant. It wasn't on my soil sample, so it wasn't something I looked at. And I think in today's world, we've got to read soil samples different than we did even 3 years ago. You know, this concept come out, but now we're starting to see the benefits that are reaped from it.
Kelly, before we do the strategies, I want to, because we've covered, you know, we get to where we cover stuff and I feel like I'm privy to this. And I think, man, this is kind of a great analogy. You and I talked about the going to the gym, you know, the person that, goes to the gym regularly is going to have a hard time seeing a big bump. Whereas the person that doesn't go to the gym, you start putting them on a program. Hey, we're going to have you on the bike and then we're going to work out with a personal trainer. You're going to do some weights. They'll see a huge bump. And that first year, right? And, right. You know, Matt played football. There's always that story of the, you know, the strong kid that, you know, that was the farm boy they made into a football player. He had huge progress his first year or two. But then making big improvements between year five and six is a hell of a lot harder than making improvements between year zero and year one. So it's that sort of low-hanging fruit. We're going to assume that even our, you know, our people we're talking about that are at county average, they've gotten their first easy bump, right? So kind of then that's where you're talking about is it's that first easy bump. Yeah, we started using fertilizer. We started using whatever this thing is, this new product. Then it becomes harder to get the next bump and the next bump.
Yes, it's a lot easier to go from doing one chin up to doing five than it is to go from doing 15 to 20 in a set. You know what I mean? Because those first gains are very easy.
And that's what we're talking about. When Matt's first 10 bushels of soybeans were easier than his second 10.
Yes. You know, and that is something that, you know, the new listener or the person wanting to break into high yields or do better, that's something that they sometimes shy away from. I've had people ask me before, well, should I use MegaGrow? Is this PGR something that will help me as an average grower, or is it just something that helps people that are more advanced? And my question is absolutely it will help, or my answer, pardon me, my answer is absolutely it will help you because it's low-hanging fruit. The first couple things you do, you're going to see tremendous gains from, and then there's a law of diminishing returns where instead of getting 5 to 6 bushel in soybeans on something, now you're going to get 2 to 3 because you're stacking these things together. And, you know, it's not about competing against your neighbor. For me, it's competing about what I think is possible and getting as close to perfect or at least reaching my potential for that year. Every year is a little bit of a moving target with the weather, of course, you know, for us being dry land, predominantly dry land. And the competition for me is as close to perfect. It's like golf. If I was golfing with Damien and Matt, I'm not competing against Damien and Matt. I'm competing against trying to hit a hole in one 18 times, basically. That's a perfect round of golf.
Yeah. Would you break clubs like I do out of anger, or would you be more methodical?
I
methodically break clubs out of anger.
I just get to laughing at myself because I'm screwed up and I get like, I just hit that shot. Why can't I do that again? Why can't I repeat? And planting corn is the same way. Why can't I do that again like I did before?
So let's talk about strategies, Matt. That's why this spawned this. You said, how is it that 10 years ago, I wasn't all that much better 5 years ago or now than I was 5 years ago and than I was 10 years ago? You were sort of a little bit bumming out that you hadn't moved the needle as much in the last year or two or three as you had 10 or 12 years ago. And that's what spawned this long. It's like, because it gets harder to do, your first bumps are your easy bumps, and then it gets harder. So what are you thinking now strategically that you're going to change?
Well, I'm actually going to go back to the basics of where I was, what I was doing 5 years ago. Now, my two-year average has improved. Sam was on that text thread that we were on. He said, well, look at your two-year average. And so I went back, just did a two-year average. And yes, I've made some small increases. Now, the big increases, I think, are gone. I don't think KLAI, either one, are going to see double-digit numbers much, very seldom, out of something that we're changing until we find the right thing. But what I'll give you a prime example from my blinders that I put on. I'll give you two, actually. One, I had a guy come in 4 or 5 years ago, and he told me I needed to have more calcium in my soil. Well, my pH was 6-7, and I literally almost asked him to leave the room because, in my dad's opinion, if he was still alive, if you limed or put out calcitic lime or some type of calcium on a 6-7 pH, I was looking at the pH, then you were just probably the stupidest farmer in the world. Number two, you know, I learned this fairly recently, and 100 pounds of muriate of potash, which is what, that's all we can get here. There's 43 pounds of salt in 100 pounds of muriate of potash. So the salt counter affects the potassium. So where I'm looking at now is I don't know, instead of farming harder, farming smarter, if that makes any sense. You know, take the money, if a ton of muriate of potash is $500 and a ton of, just say, potassium sulfate is $1,000, I'm using round numbers, put out half as much potassium sulfate, you'll get a better return on the potassium piece not put the salt in there. Those are the new things we're having to think about, you know, back to balancing the soils that, you know, there's Kelly used this all the time. Don't push the easy button, you know, and I've learned that the hard way some, but looking at my farm in a smarter agronomic way, you know, trying to be that perfect farmer like Kelly's talking about. Neither one of us are going to get there, but you don't try, you're damn sure not ever going to get there.
All right. When he says, first off, farming smarter versus farming harder, that's good. That's what we're obviously here for. We're sharing a lot of great information. But that calcium example, I'm not sure I followed. Okay, then what's – I get that you got information that you thought you disagreed with, but now you're looking back. Are you saying that in hindsight you didn't disagree with him, you did need calcium, and tie that back with the salt thing, because I'm not agronomically smart enough to understand what the calcium could do about the salt problem.
Well, I run two scenarios at you really too fast, okay? So my calcium problem was my calcium-magnesium ratio, you know, about to get that in balance.
Which Kelly talks about balance. That's his thing now is balance, 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 yes?
Yeah, and hopefully it's not a fad. It don't look like it is from what we're seeing as results. But in that scenario, I was needing to balance my calcium-magnesium ratio so that those nutrients plus the other nutrients could get to where they need to be available. The second scenario was I'm taking a product, a potassium product, which is used all over the world. You know, 10 years ago, I didn't even know there was a different type of potash other than muriate of potash. But I'm taking that source and removing the salt, which is the bad part of it, by using an alternative product, which will give me sulfur or magnesium, you know, in there with it. So just different ways of looking at things to not only that may cost more, but they're improving the availability of nutrients to your farm. So even though we always look at pH, that's always been the deal. What's your pH? If it's below 6, you know, you're pretty much in trouble. If it's above 6.5, you're in optimum, but optimum pH and enough calcium magnesium ratio in your soil are basically, I think, two different things. Kelly's forgotten more about that than I know.
All right. He went straight to, I said, what are your strategies? And then Matt went right to soil. He went right to some changing his perspective from what it would have been 5 or so years ago about the soil. And they talked about balance. You're going to talk a lot about soil, but is it breaking through the threshold? Is it all about soil, or is there going to be some other stuff? Just so I know how to categorize this.
No, there. You know, soil is one aspect. The foliar feeding is an aspect. The planting rate. You know, Matt talks about maybe his yield hasn't gone up. You know, I remember when I used to think 55 bushel beans were good, and now I need 70. And I would tell you that now Matt expects 80, I expect 65. But it used to be when I started farming and we were hoping for 50 bushel beans, we were planting 225,000 beans an acre. Now I'm expecting 65 or 70, and I'm planting 90,000 beans an acre. So there's a threshold right there. Not just did we break the yield, but look at how the seed expense has gone down well over half. You know what I mean? That's also a threshold. There's other ways to do better than just to be just for the yield to get better. We get more and more efficient. We get leaner all the time. We're forced to because of the margins are tight. However, you should always strive to do the best you can and not be wasteful. But, you know, there's a threshold on our soil. There's a threshold with the plant and the foliar feeding. When I started, in 17, I put the first in furrow system on the first in furrow system for fertility on the planter. And I thought, holy cow, here we go. You know what? Chad Henderson says this, you cannot buy 400 bushel corn. There is not a secret sauce. There's not a silver bullet. And we still have the inferral system on the planter. In corn, there's 9 things. N, P, and K aren't one of them. We've taken all that off because it hasn't paid for us. We still have some calcium on the planter, like Matt said. We have some zinc on the planter. The other things are carbon, sugar, stress mitigation, insecticide products. And now to break the threshold now, we're moving all that fertility, that budget, that fertility is going from the planter to the airplane. And now we're fertilizing in an R stage. And 6 years ago, 7 years ago, we weren't even spraying fungicide on our rotated corn, only our corn on corn. Now we're making 3 passes on every field because now we know how precious or important that fertility is in the R stages. it just keeps evolving.
Okay, so I've wrote down, I kind of make sure we get to it. So I wrote down a couple of things. Soil, foliar feeding, planting rate, practices, which is probably, there has to be at least several things that you guys are both going to point out, I would think, about new practice. You mentioned airplane. You mentioned later treatment, which you're going to, you know, have to figure out a way to do it. And I wrote new products, kind of like hyphen biologicals, all those things, which when Matt talks about his going back 10 years ago, I'm venture to say he did not use not one of those category of products 10 years ago, probably not even 5 years ago, right, Matt?
10 years ago, Matt didn't spell biological.
he always pick on you anyway.
No, I couldn't either. And neither one of us. You never would have thought of that.
And then also I wrote down the big R underlying thing, which we're gonna get to at the end. When we talk about breaking through your own threshold, it doesn't just mean more bushels. I think it's about profit. I mean, there's a threshold of when Matt first got $50 an acre of net, he probably, like in 1990, probably thought, you know what, I made money per acre. Hell, there's been times you didn't do that. Now you start having that threshold. So anyway, Matt, soil, if you want to wrap up on that, and then I want to go through any of those other categories about what your strategy is of using those things, foliar, planting rates, practices, new products.
Yeah, planting rates in general, paying more attention to my planter. That picked me up yield, you know, as far as corn and soybeans, either one, you've got to, there's certain things that with your planter, if you don't have those right on your planter, your spacing right on your planter, you're going to cost yourself bushels there. And so, seeding rate, same way, you know, Kelly said, you know, he's planting 200,000 seeds and now he's planting 90. That's less than half seed cost of what it was before. A lot of the things Kelly and I do, I've got to wade my way through some of these things. So I still have fertility on the planter, not near as much as I did, not as much as I thought that we needed. The answer is not throwing a bunch of stuff at a plant. The answer is getting that plant exactly what it needs at the right time. The R stages, he's 100% right. There's big yields to be picked up at the R stages. I did it last year. Didn't work out too well for me because I was in a heat wave during that time, and that plant shuts down and just has to survive and doesn't get to use those nutrients like they do when you've got cooler temperatures. So I'm still working with that R3 deal. Foliars is something that we do on a regular basis. Again, getting that plant what it needs at the right time.
You know what? I can't think of a better segue than to right now take a little break and talk about our friends at Nature's. Nature's is one of our business partners. Tommy Roach is our buddy over there, and he's quite the agronomic dude. He talks a lot about putting the right product in the plant at the right time, as Matt just articulated. So you can do that with Nature's products powered by Bio-K. You can target specific periods of influence. You know what? R2, R3, whatever that thing should be when that plant needs it. It mitigates stress by doing this. You're giving the plant the shot in the arm that needs exactly when it needs it. You're enhancing your crop yield. You're boosting your farm's return on investment. That's what it's all about. Nature's products powered by Bio-K. Fertility products that are targeted at times of specific parts, at times of influence in your crop. Also very effective on a year when you're trying to cut back a little bit on some of your inputs because of lower commodity prices. Check out natures.com, N-A-C-H-U-R-S, natures.com.
If I could touch on Matt's, soil comments, that is, I'm sitting here thinking that was the first big threshold, and that was because of the plant food product. To break a threshold takes education and understanding. You need to learn more. And I learned that sulfur wasn't just a fertilizer. It was a soil amendment like lime. You know, it's the inverse of lime. And used to be, just like Matt, when I looked at a soil test, all I looked at was pH and how many parts per million of K I had, or what my P1 and P2 was on phosphorus. I don't look at any of that anymore. Now I look at the base saturation, and I want to balance the soil. I want 65% calcium, I want 13% magnesium, and I want 4% potassium. And if I use sulfur, in my hills, I use sulfur to reach that, and everything else will come into line. The pH will come into line, the parts per million will come into line, and then you're attacking that problem, you're breaking that threshold from the correct perspective. If you try to look at it from a pH perspective or a parts per million perspective, you can't fix it. You have to fix it from a base saturation perspective. That's how you break that threshold, at least in our soils.
But when you and Kelly's 100% right. When you know your mental thinking is, well, I'll just go out there and put 500 pounds of potassium on my crop. Well, then you're throwing everything else out of balance, you know, or any nutrient that you think is really a good nutrient. It is, but too much of a good thing will actually turn around and have a reverse effect because you get it out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
So balanced soil is one of your big things, and you just spoke to that in two different ways. You also just talked about, all right, clearly, if you're going to break your own threshold, you're not going to do it with anhydrous. We've been doing that forever. You're not going to do it with a nitrogen stabilizer. We've been doing that. You're not going to do it by doing soil sampling. If you're already at a point where you're thresholding, chances are you're already at least advanced enough. You're doing soil sampling, those kind of things. But what else to your soil? We get companies that work with us that are new. There's some skepticism in the marketplace about new products. You're going to have to try some new products along with practices and all the other things to do it. Where are you on new products to get through to bust out of a threshold? Some of the stuff we're trialing, I know, on your farms and field days and things like that.
We're constantly trying new products, and we're doing that because of Extreme Ag. Both of us are. But I would tell anybody that's listening, you need to take 10% of your acres and do research on your farm. Your farm, you know, we can cut the learning curve for you. We can tell you what products work and what products don't for us, but you still need to take them to your farm and try them because your farm is different. Your desires are different. Your goals are different. Your budget is different. You know, like I said, I've taken almost all fertility off my planter. Matt hasn't. Well, Matt's soil is different. He needs some fertility on the planter. He gets a bang out of that. So that a statement that I make for me is not a blanket statement for everyone across the country. And you need to try new products. You're not going to break your next threshold without trying new products. You can't
say to the listener, Kelly, that it was just yesterday we did a recording and I made a teeny little wisecrack about Arkansas soil. And he got really mad and he yelled at me and he insulted my soil. I'm like, you know what? I thought it was the trickle down thing. Your agronomist Evans insults my farm ground. And then I figured I got to go and pick on somebody that's lower than me. And then Matt got mad.
Well, I'm on the bottom of that whole soil deal. So of all of us in this group of Extreme Ag, I'm on the bottom. So it does kind of piss you off when you get reminded that you're on the bottom all the time.
Well, you're on the bottom with the – so what does that say for Damien and I? If you're on the bottom of the soil, you've got the best soybean yields. Apparently, you're the best farmer then too, because our soybean yields – or 20 bushel behind yours.
I did. He didn't maybe read that comment, but I said it might be the farmer on the soils that you were talking about.
Yeah. Well,
but, that's what, and we're going to see this year. Kelly's 100,000% right. You know, Temple can do things in Maryland. Kelly can do things in Iowa that absolutely will not work for me. Chad can do things that won't work for me. And we're pretty close to the same, you know, straight across the United States. But it's different soil types, plus it's a little bit different weather at different times. They have a lot more cold that they have to deal with than we do. We got a lot more heat than they have. So, you know, definitely what Kelly said is important. You know, just because it works for me or works for Kelly, it might not work for you. But you can't – if you're standing still, you're backing up. That's what my dad always told me. So you've – whether it's products or new ways of looking at soil samples or – fertility or whatever, you've got to be, you know, I've heard the statement, you got to be a shadow in your field. You've got to be a shadow in your whole business. You know, back to Kelly talking, his favorite word is net. You know, that's where we got to be. Is the highest yields I can make in the state going to net me more? If not, that's not where I need to be. I need to be wherever's going to net me the most money. Traditionally, that comes from higher yields. And that's something that I think farmers are going to make a mistake this year. I've heard it time and time again. Well, we're going to have to cut this stuff out because it you know, we can't spend that money. You still got to go look, even if corn's $3, you know, what does it take out of a product to get, you know, if the product's $6, what will it be over 2 bushels? If it is, then if you can just break even, you give that plant the opportunity to go further. But if you don't give it that opportunity, you know, to break even, you don't want to lose money, but if you don't get the opportunity to break even, I don't have to have a 2-to-1 return to what I'm saying on my inputs, whether what kind of trial it is or product. If I can get it even, then I know that that gives that plant the opportunity to do more if the weather's right.
Got it. What about on products? Obviously, there's the biologicals. We're still doing a lot of different stuff with that. Where's the, when you talk about breaking through your threshold, tell me a product or at least a category that you think has helped you get through the threshold just in the last couple of years.
The NutriCharge product that Matt brought to us has really helped out. That's from a base saturation perspective. I didn't think that that product was going to help because of all the work I do with sulfur to balance my base saturation. And it still helped in a big way. That's been a good product. The stress mitigation products, you know, Steve Sexton, Scott Lay from Agrison wanted me to try that Accomplish Max. And that was in 21. It was very dry in June. And I thought, boy, what a bunch of snake oil this is going to be. But we put it out there. They only said enough for 48 rows across this quarter mile field. And I'm like, there's no way this is going to work. We walked out there in June. The corn's 8 inches tall. It's rolled up tight because it's hot and dry. And we got out there to the two different applied areas. And they were both unrolled like it was cooler and wetter. I was sold at that point. Turned out to be 28 bushel. And never did I think that was going to be like that. And then that led us down the path of the stress mitigation products that we've been on. That has helped.
Led you to, in 2022, you said that your overriding, overarching theme for 2022 to break through your threshold was to work at creating a stress-free crop. Because you said, I don't think we've ever seen a stress-free crop.
And look at how fast things evolve. Prior to that trial with Accomplish Max in 21, I didn't even know there was a stress threshold that I was looking at because it never even crossed my mind.
When we've been to Little Vietnam, as you affectionately call the Deschê County, down where Matt Miles farms in the Delta region of Arkansas, he lovingly refers to Little Vietnam, and it does have some very harsh environments. Is the product that you're going to continue to try, is it about soil or stress? I'm guessing probably stress, right? But you don't. But then you've said, I don't know, Damien, if I can even do anything about the stress when it's 103.
I think there's a certain point where the, you know, it's with anything that you use, there's a certain point that goes beyond health. I mean, not just in agriculture, but anything you're doing. I mean, it stress mitigators, yes, they do help us. And we've seen some double-digit, you know, yield increases out of them at times. Now, it can, I think, sometimes can be overcome by getting too much of heat or whatever.
Yeah.
But stress mitigators are still, I looked at my Infura, when I was talking about taking things out. And I looked at my Infura program and I said, okay, I sat down with Lane. I said, we gotta trim the fat. And we looked at all 7 products. Couldn't really find anything there that we thought we could take out, you know? So I said, well, we're going to pretty much stay with our same Infura package. You know, I did a fertility test this year, and this was more on my own than it was through Extreme Ag, but I did a 3-gallon, 5-gallon and 1-gallon phosphorus fertilizer, you know, starter fertilizer replicated across 80 acre field. 5 gallons won, no question. But 3 gallons was the best ROI. And guess what? This guy put on all his crop, 1, because I was listening to others that were making that work 1-0. And so I thought, well, if they can do it, I can do it. And so I put 1 gallon across my whole crop, could have put 3 and got a better ROI. So it's evolving all the time. But what I've seen, and this has been more in the last probably 30 days of just meditation, I guess, is that looking at the basics and fixing the basics first, and then adding on top of that these products that we think will work. I've got a lot of work I've got to do just to fix my basic agronomy. So that you got to start with that foundation, whether it's soil, foliar, seeding, or the right variety. You've got to start with your base and go up, and I've got to go back to drawing board and just look at my base agronomy.
Breaking your threshold, what's interesting is Matt says something I think that all of us know. We with the weather obviously matters, but I'm writing down here, the foundation, the soil is the foundation. And it's interesting, you're already at a high yield, but when you say, what are we going to do to get to the next level, to bust out of the, to get to the next plateau, he's still going back to soil. Kelly, you went to stress. What's interesting is, I want to go to back to the product thing also. Neither of you ever said, I got to get better seed. And it's, wasn't it, it a year ago when Kelly said, seed gets too much credit on a good year and too much blame on a bad year. The genetics aren't the problem. I never heard either of you say to get to break the, genetic, the threshold, you got to get different genetics.
The genetics for us here are not the problem. We're, you know, people talk about they want the new variety, the new racehorse variety. I'm telling you what, we're so far from the potential of that seed that that's not a threshold. Oh, well, I hope it's a threshold someday. It's not now.
Hey, by the way, Matt, he just used the word racehorse as it relates to a seed variety. Have you ever heard a seed salesman describe seed as a racehorse? That's a novel term I've never heard ever. It's not the most overused term in the entire seed industry, is it?
It is absolutely the most overused term. And what a racehorse will do is, if you stump your toe on a race, if they tell you it's a racehorse variety, you better be ready to do everything when it needs to be done. Because I've had those racehorses that I'd stump my toe on and they'd drop 20 bushel below what a good average seed is. So yes, the racehorse variety is there. But think about this. I mean, Alex Harrell, what is he, 200 something bushel soybeans? And Mr. Davis over 600 bushel corn. So we know the varieties are there. You know, we know that it's not necessarily got to be that specific variety they use, but we know the varieties, as Kelly said, has the potential. We're our worst own enemy when we start a crop, and the mistakes we make to get to that point. So we know what the opportunity is out there. We've just got to figure out how to find it. And when you're looking at the biologicals, I wish we had that slide. There is a picture of all the biological companies that sell to agriculture. Y'all seen it. Yeah. And there's not another place you could write a word on it, little bitty words. You know, how do we figure that part out?
Yeah. 1,200 companies in the biological space was the gist of that slide. And that slide doesn't even have all 1,200 of them on them. It's got like the ones that have been around for more than a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's very illustrative. So nobody said seed. We talk about, Matt's dad says, if you're standing still, you're going backwards. So products, practices, besides planting rate, is there a practice change to get you to break from a strategy to break through your threshold?
I would say, can we count variable rate as a practice?
Absolutely. I mean, what is it? What else would it be besides a practice? You changed how you're fertilizing every acre, every half acre.
Well, so we variable rate our anhydrous. And, you know, Matt talked about anhydrous isn't going to help you break the threshold. It's the same anhydrous. He's right. This year we had a trial, 0, 60, 120, 180, and 240 pounds of anhydrous. 180 was the best yield, but the zero was by far the worst, okay? But the 60 through the 240, this is on corn, obviously, all yielded within 4 or 5 bushel of each other. The 180 had the best by a couple bushel, but that's negligible. The 60 was the best ROI by quite a few dollars. Obviously, when you're putting on 60 or 120 pounds less, and I would tell you that I would say in this area, most people are over 180. And here on this trial, we showed that 60 was the most profitable. So that's a threshold. So variable rate is a threshold that we have come upon, because now we're, instead of managing by the field, we're not even managing by the acre. We try to manage by the square foot. We're not that tight yet. Yeah. We're probably in a 30 by 30 spot. You know, we're managing by the 900 square feet. And we're managing that way. We're putting the fertility where we need it. That's a huge practice change in the last few years. And we're variable rate our corn seed. We're variable rate our bean seed. And I think there is significant savings and there's a yield bump from all three of those things, anhydrous, corn, and bean variable rate.
Matt, we just recorded talking about drainage, which is fairly new to the Delta region. You put in tile. You're going to use tile as drainage. especially in your sharky clays, heavier soils that are really flat as a pancake and very, very tight. But then also you're going to use it in the Vietnam era of July and August when it's 105 degrees to put water back in the field. That's a practice. It's an expensive practice. It's an amortized over 7 to 10 years before it really starts to pay you back kind of a practice. But is that, do you think that has a play in breaking you to your next threshold, breaking through this threshold?
I think, you know, I'm still, I don't want to use the word skeptical because I'm not skeptical. I've got, you know, I've got data to prove where it increased the yield on that specific field. And I think it can increase my yield on that specific soil type. Now that's about 20% of my soil type. The other 80%, y'all seen in the show, I picked it up and it blew away, you know, the deep sand. So I'm really concentrating on practice wise on the deep sand. So, you know, what Kelly said with the variable rate, the biggest thing that I've seen is fertility placement on my farm. Instead of, you know, I was all dry probably 7 years ago, I was 100% dry. No way I was doing liquid. It slowed me down. I was all about acres per hour. And I've had to rethink my whole, and I think that's why my 2 year average is better than my 5 year average, is because I'm not looking at it at acres per hour anymore. I'm looking at doing the best job I can. As Kelly said, being a perfect farmer, you know, I'm not near about close to where I need to be there, but you know, what's the difference in placing that fertility by the base of the plant or by the roots versus having it over in that middle on the rows that I have to go on that it probably won't even get. And then, you know, I have to spoon feed because my sandy soils that a lot of my nutrients leach. So I've paid more attention. Again, I keep beating a dead dog to basic agronomy and improving my way of doing the basic things. And then when you do the basic things right, it enables these extra products to work even better. So if I've got everything done right to begin with, or close as I can, then something like a foliar or a biological will work. A prime example, when I first started using biologicals, I was getting negative out of them almost.
Yeah.
And I had chlorine in my water. So every time I filled the tank up, before I could get the tractor to the field, I'd killed all the biology. It's education and educating ourselves, you know, is what to do. I said this the other day in a meeting, and I think, I'm not sure who I got this from. It's not my quote, but a guy said, if a biological salesman comes in to sell you biology and he don't ask you what your water source is, tell him to hit the road.
By the way, dear listener, if you haven't been with us for the 2.5 years since I started doing this, it was one of the first things we covered, I think, when I started, and we're digging into biologicals. Matt gets his water from a municipal water source, which is treated. So there's a good chance you don't have that problem, but you definitely should let us make the mistake for you, as Matt did. If you're going to use biologicals, test the water and make sure of that. That's a good one. Break it through.
If you're not running off of a well, you're running some type of municipal water because it's coming from a treated area that goes to houses. So, you know, it's real easy to go hook up to that municipal water and because they're, you know, it's convenient. So that's the first thing that we had to correct is our water source. And Kelly has talked about the bicarbonates in the water. You know, that's something that we don't look at. That's another base thing that we should be looking at to fix our problems in basic agronomy.
Breaking through your threshold, strategy for breaking through your threshold. We've gotten soil as obviously the foundation. We've covered a lot of that. Foliar feeding, I think that we've done that. Obviously, we talked about like our business partners over at Nature's. What about foliar feeding? Is there anything else? You're going to go a little later in the season. I know that that's one of the things that Johnny talks about is, you know, going a little later in the season. What do you think? Where's the strategy on that?
For me?
Foliar feeding. I mean, is there something more is there something you think that's a missing piece? Is there a strategy you're going to deploy in 24 that involves a foliar treatment that you think busts you into that next level?
Yes. We started this in 23. It's new for us. And it's because we have started working with agronomists in Idaho, Jared Cook, to me, agronomy is chemistry plus biology. I've never met anybody until I met Jared that understands the chemistry side like he does. And the things that he has explained to Evans, Wingrove, Vern, and I just blows my mind. Every chance I get to talk to him is tremendous. And it he's introduced us to sap sampling now instead of tissue sampling, because he says that sap sampling is predictive. We send the sap samples to only one lab, New Age. It's in Michigan. They only take the sap out of the phloem and xylem, which is the arterial system, the vein system, if you will, of the plant. And then we could tell what nutrients are moving. So every week, Vern is taking a sap sample, and he's taking a soil sample so we can see what's available in the soil. He takes an old leaf and a new growth leaf so we can see what's moving in the plant. And the goal is to assimilate or balance, use 95% of our nitrogen. The plant, this is oversimplifying it, but our foliar feeding program now revolves around this. The plant takes nitrogen and turns it into a protein. It is able to do that because it takes micronutrients and creates amino acids to convert the nitrogen to protein. And especially, I will tell you, across the whole nation, we probably have too much nitrogen. That's not a complete statement. We have too much nitrogen relative to the amount of micronutrients. We are not able to produce enough amino acids to assimilate or convert all of the nitrogen. And too much nitrogen leads to excess vegetative growth. There's stress mitigation that can problems that can come in. There is disease problems that can come in. And basically, just like I said before, we're just not reaching our potential. So we have too much nitrogen relative to the micronutrients. So they need to come into balance, again, the word balance, with one another. So our foliar feeding program at V10 in corn, R1, R5, those types of things, what we're doing is taking that sap sample and we're trying to balance. This year, we did achieve balance at 1,300 parts per million of nitrogen. And I was all excited because that ear set, 75% of my plants had two ears. Now, Matt has said he doesn't really want to have two ears because we can't hold it, and he thinks it's a waste of energy. Matt might be right. I will tell you, I just want the plant to reach its potential nutritionally, and I'm not going to tell it how to flex. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen because I don't know what's going to happen. We had double ears on 75% of our plants, and I thought, holy shit, we have blown the top off this thing. Then we couldn't hold them. Mm-hmm. I thought we had broken the threshold, and then we couldn't hold them. What Matt says happened again. They aborted. I now believe, though, that we assimilated. We know that we were at 95% assimilation, which is the goal, but it was at 1,300 parts per million nitrogen. I'm now going to add some nitrogen to my foliar feed program in the R stages, and I want to reach assimilation at 95% assimilation. I want to reach that at 2,000 parts per million. Jared has done some work in onions and potatoes. I understand it's a different crop, but I'll tell you, onions, potatoes, sugar beets, soybeans, corn, when you're talking about this kind of balance, it's eerily similar between all of these different plants where we need to be. There's not that much difference. And the next threshold I believe that I can beat, I'm hoping, 2,000 parts per million nitrogen, 95% assimilation, I think I can hold those double ears. That'll be what we do this year. That's the change.
All right, Matt.
I know that got long, but I can't explain it.
I did a little bit. That's all right. I think we're getting close to wrapping it up. Do you have anything off of that when we're talking about foliar feeding? And otherwise, we're going to wrap it here.
Well, on the foliar feeding, you know, and I think we've all learned this now, but right products. If you take, you know, if you look at the data on potassium acetate versus, you know, melted down potassium as far as how it gets in the plant, you know, choose the right product that you know will get in the plant. You can spray a foliar all day long. If you spray it at the wrong time or if you spray the wrong kind, it's just going to lay there and look pretty on the top of your leaf or either piss you off because it's going to be white. And what Kelly's saying, what, you know, again, with the easy button, front end loading everything, you know, everybody wants the front end load because it's easy. You know, you're not as busy during that time. The demand curve for corn for the majority of its nutrients is later on in the season.
Yeah, I mean, so that's, by the way, you talk about strategies for breaking through your threshold. For the person that is still front-end loading, that's the easy way to break through their threshold right there, is to stop front-loading and start doing stuff through the season, I think, is, and probably for both crops, right?
Yeah, right. And Kelly's right. You know, now when he increases his nitrogen, I guarantee you he'll say yes to this. He's going to increase his micronutrients because mm-hmm. he's going to need to do that to keep it in balance.
That's right.
One of the things that I thought was the Bible that I see now, and I give Kelly a bunch of credit for this, is we're using too much fertilizer. You know, we're using too much nitrogen. We cut back 50 units this year, and we lost one bushel in the trial. And this wasn't a little Mickey Mouse trial. This was an advanced trial, and we cut back 50 units. So figure that money and figure it on a $5 bushel. You know, we might way more than paid for reducing that. Plus, we help the environment.
Okay, what I really like there, because this kind of brings it full circle, I said at some point, strategies for breaking through your threshold, everyone's going to think yield. That's fine. We're farm people. Farm people love to concentrate, focus on yield, yield, yield. More bushels, more pounds, more gallons, whatever. But there's a threshold also about profitability. If you're not always looking at how to break through your threshold of profitability, you know, and there's going to be variable profits from one year to the next based on the commodity price, et cetera. 50 units of nitrogen reduction and losing one bushel of corn, I'd rather have that math and be positive in my money than go to the coffee shop and brag that I busted my own threshold over a certain yield quantity all day long.
Yep. I agree with you. With corn price down, that number even gets greater.
Yeah, yeah, you lost $4.60 worth of corn, but you peeled back your nitrogen spend by what, $100 or something like that, right?
That gets back to our favorite word, net.
Yeah,
net. These guys are awesome strategies for breaking through your threshold, and like I said, it's more than just yield. It's also about the money, because you all have your threshold. And what is neat about this, Matt brought this up during the fall. What you heard in this episode was a lot about the first bump is the easy bump. And then once you do plateau at a certain level, it takes a little bit more creativity. It takes a little bit more ingenuity, and more importantly, it's a little bit of more experimentation to get to the next level. Talked about soil as a foundation, foliar feeding, planting rate, different practices, new products, and all of the above when you want to break through your threshold. Matt Miles, Kelly Garrett, this is a great topic. I think we're going to revisit this again every year or two, because it's a good subject. If you guys are willing to do it.
Absolutely.
All right. Till next time, check us out at extremeag.farm. Literally hundreds of episodes just like this that are out there. If you want to take your learning to the next level, become a member of Extreme Ag, extremeag.farm, $750 a year. You get direct access to guys like Kelly and Matt and the other guys for a question and answer platform. If you want to go a little deeper on a subject, you also get data from our trial results at the end of every year. You get free offers from some of our business partners. Like, for instance, you can go to Commodity Classic for free, all for $750 a year. Also, very excited, in the year 2024, we're putting out the Extreme Ag Show. It's on YouTube. If you go to YouTube, just type in Extreme Ag, hit subscribe. It's free. You can watch it. It's behind the scenes, seeing guys like these two in their natural environment, out there working and all the cool stuff. So it makes reality TV look like crap. It is an awesome show. Go and check it out. It's the extremeag.show. It's also available on Acres TV. So go and check it out there. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Till next time, Kelly, Matt, my name is Damian Mason. Thanks for being here. Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve.
That's a wrap for this episode of Cutting the Curve. Make sure to check out extremeag.farm for more great content to help you squeeze more profit out of your farming operation. Cutting the Curve is brought to you by Kloss, where machines aren't just made, they're made for more. Visit kloss.com and start cutting your curve with cutting-edge equipment.